So I guess my first point before we jump off into Diane's PowerPoint is, I think it's really, really incumbent to all of the debtors' councils to try and make reasonable inquiries to the facts that would lead to a 523 or 727 complaint. What I often have found when I have trials, it's as if the debtor's lawyer hasn't really made very much of an inquiry of their client. And so if you make the reasonable inquiry, hopefully the first way to avoid a 523 or 727 is to know about it before the case is filed. But if you get that adversary that's expected or not, I think that it's very, very important, and I'll echo Judge Jones's comments from earlier, that it's very, very important that you talk to your client. I always made it a practice that whenever I got a 523 or a 727 complaint, I sat down and spent a long period of time with my client. I meet with my client. I'd evaluate the case with them based on the elements that are in the paper that's attached to this presentation. And then I try and settle those bad cases. You know, there are cases that you know basically are bad when you get them, and settlement sometimes is the best result. After you've met with your client and you basically have evaluated whether you're going to have a defense, basically make sure that you file your answer, your pleadings timely. I'm surprised by the couple of cases I've had where late filed answers, late filed pleadings that have really been prejudicial to the client. After you basically have been served and you've done your answer, I think that it's really important, especially in a Chapter 7 case where we all know that we're going to have limited resources, that you basically have specific discovery as to the elements that we're going to discuss in just a few minutes. What I often get in these cases in trials is what I consider to be a data dump. And so on the plaintiff's side, I get basically all this evidence and they're trying to see what's going to stick. But on the debtor side, where there actually would be a defense based on some sort of missing element or some sort of failure proof, I get this long litany of this is why I filed bankruptcy, woe is me, debtor type testimony, which unfortunately doesn't do very much to defend the adversary proceeding. All right? So just be sure that you're aware of the elements, that your client's aware of the elements, and that your pretrial statement, your findings of fact, your conclusions of law are specific. What you actually want me to find, that this element is missing, and this is the reason the debtor wins. I often get pretrial statements that says, debtor just claims the debt's dischargeable. And there's no sort of specific findings at all, and I'm assuming that they simply want me to wade through the evidence and hopefully raise some sort of defense for the debtor. So I encourage you to focus your witness testimony on the required elements. Just so you're aware, and I'm not sure how the other judges do it, I have a checklist on the bench for all of the 523 and 727 complaints. And most of what you see in the paper that I've written are those checklists. And so I'm going through those elements as the testimony is going on and saying, proved, not proved. Here's where basically there's doubt. So just remember that that checklist and those elements, that's how we make a determination as to whether you win or you lose. Remember, these cases are won and lost on the burden of proof. Who has the burden? We'll talk about that in just a few minutes when we review the slides. But burden of proof basically is very, very important. If we have some time, we're also going to talk about fees and fee bifurcation. If we get to them after the slides, we're going to try and avoid the paper, except for me to tell you that the paper has the required elements of all of the 523 and 727 complaints. That's where your focus should be, either as a plaintiff or as a defendant. All right, so let's move to the slides. And do you have any comments you want to make about what I've just said?
No, but the trial handbook that is part of the material, if you have it electronic, I urge you just print it out and put it, especially as a debtor's attorney, in your file. Stick it away, because you never know when you're going to get that 523 and you're going to say, which seminar did I go to that got it? So just print it off now so you have it. So when it comes up 5 years from now, you'll know what to do, because it does come about. Our first slide just talks about the hard deadline for creditors to file the objection to the discharge. It's 60 days from the first 341. The first setting. So even if it's continued, your time is still running. Something that, just to help the creditor attorneys out, is that if you need an extension, the order granting the extension must be entered prior to the expiration. So that's kind of a, you're welcome to you creditor attorneys that I gave you that hint.
And the other issue is the summons. We often, and I don't know why it is, but I often see these adversaries proceedings filed and then there's no return of service. So basically they'll file it and then they'll basically, due to ignorance or just inadvertence, basically sit on the summons and not serve it. And it has to be served within 120 days. And there's case law to suggest that if it's not served within 120 days, that you can't reissue a new summons and that basically the adversary then goes away.
Okay. Well, I have heard of stale summons, but at the same time, usually not for my clients. They find them. And on the burden of proof, the standard proof is the, I'm sorry, the standard of burden of dischargeability exception is the ordinary preponderance of evidence standard. So when you're weighing it, it's just, it tips slightly to the scale. Is that correct?
That's correct.